Good evening, and welcome to the 27th Legislative District Telephone Town Hall with Representatives Lori Jenkins, Jake Fye, and Senator Jeannie Darnielle. My name is Max, and I'll be moderating tonight's call. We're calling you tonight to give you an opportunity to ask your elected representatives any questions you might have on issues like the state budget, education, jobs, transportation, public safety, or anything else that's important to you. If you have a question for Senator Darnielle, Representative Jenkins, or Representative Fye, all you need to do is press *3 on your phone, and we'll connect you with a volunteer who will place you in the question queue. Again, pressing *3 right now or any time during the call is all you need to do to ask your elected official a question. This is a live telephone town hall. We're calling you tonight because you're a registered voter in the 27th Legislative District and because your state legislators want to hear from you on the issues that matter to you most. We'd like to get to as many questions as possible this evening, so again, please press *3 if you would like to ask a question of your representatives. Now, before we start with questions, I'll turn it over to our legislators for some brief opening remarks.
Good evening, everyone. This is State Senator Jeannie Darnielle here on the line in Olympia. I think Max did a great job of setting up the process for tonight's Teletown Hall, and just again want to encourage you to hit *3 if you do have a specific question. I'll just tell you a little bit about life in the Senate for me right now. I am, as most of you know, a member of the minority party in the Senate, which means that my lead position is as a ranking member of the Human Services, Mental Health, and Housing Committee, as well as serving on the Law and Justice Committee and on the Financial Institutions and Insurance Committee. I also chair the Caseload Forecast Council, and tonight I'm joined by my two colleagues in the House of Representatives, and I'll hand it over to Jake.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you for joining. I'm Jake Fye, and I'm representative of your district, and I have serve on the Environment, Technology, and Economic Development, and I'm Vice Chair of the Transportation Committee. So a couple of things that you may be curious about, the bills that are in our committee is the Oil Transportation Bill and Governor Inslee's Carbon Tax Proposal.
Hi, this is Lori Jenkins, and thank you, just like everyone else said, for joining the call. Just so you know, we are now in our almost ending our fourth week of the legislative session, so we've been in session for a month. We have two more weeks where we'll be hearing bills in our policy committees, and then the budget committee will kind of work on those bills, and pretty soon, by the beginning of March, all the bills that started in one house will have to either make it out of the house or die and go into the other house to be heard, and we start the process again. I serve as chair of the Judiciary Committee, and the Judiciary Committee has a pretty big jurisdiction, but we are mostly this year focused on mental health issues, landlord-tenant issues, some family law issues, and some issues around the court system. I also serve on the Health Care and Wellness Committee, and on the Appropriations Committee, which writes the House budget. So with that, I think we're ready for phone calls.
Here we go.
Thank you for that brief update about what's going on with all of you. Again, to everyone on the line, this is a live telephone town hall, and if you'd like to ask a question of your state legislators, please press *3 on your phone at any point during the call. To start us off this evening, we have a question from Rebecca, who wants to know about fully funding K-12 education. Rebecca, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Yes, I am a parent on the east side of Tacoma, and I am very concerned with how public schools are currently being funded. Even though No Child Left Behind is not my favorite thing, I was very disappointed that we didn't get the waiver. And especially being a parent on the east side of Tacoma, I can tell you that our schools are in desperate need of funding.
So let me try to give you at least an idea. One of the other legislators may have some additional responses. So we are challenged because the deficit or the opportunity to fully fund a K-12 education is not a small dollar matter. And at least the House Democrats have had some conversations about different proposals, and I'm sure that one of the other legislators might talk about some of the specifics. But one of the things I wanted to mention was, you know, I think we'll be here a long time because their views vary on how to fund education. Primarily, the Democrats are willing to raise additional revenue through additional taxes. The Republicans, not so much. One of the ideas that's been out there that is called the levy swap, which would be helpful particularly to taxpayers in Tacoma because it would spread the state responsibility statewide and not be so burdensome on local school districts. I believe that Tacoma has one of the highest levy rates for property values in the state of Washington, so hopefully there would be less of a burden on taxpayers in Tacoma. But I think we're all committed to stay here until we have a good bill that's going to get us the distance that we need to get to fully fund education.
You know, the governor's budget did come out just as the session was starting, and by constitutional law, the governor has to provide a balanced budget to the legislature, and then he or she, but this year it's a he, also provides us with what they really want to see happen and how much that will cost in new revenue in order to fulfill all the work of that of that goal. So I did want to say that the governor's second budget was really quite aggressive in not only funding the McCleary decision, which will be $1.3 billion more in education this biennium, which is 2 years, but also $2.4 billion in the following 2 years. And he's got a pile of really creative and evidence-based programs that he's adding in, from first-year teachers having mentors so their performance is improved, all the way up through some readiness programs. And so it is possible to look at the governor's budget. Our budget, which will be, we use the governor's budget, something of a jumping-off point, is yet to be determined, as Jake said, and we may be here a long time hammering out the details of that, especially the funding formula.
This is Lori. I would just say quickly that if we want a 21st century education system for our kids, and I think it's our moral responsibility, it's very clear to me after having been down here for 4 years that on the revenue system that we've got, we cannot do it. And so we really need to look at the governor's proposals on revenue generation. We also have court cases saying we're not appropriately providing our mentally ill family members and neighbors with the right kind of care that we need to. So we've got really a series of things we've got to address this year. I'm the prime sponsor of the capital gains tax bill, which if others ask questions, I'll be happy to talk about more as we get into the call. But I think it's an absolutely terrific option for us to try and start remaking our highly regressive tax system and also fund education, mental health services, and those things that are so important to our communities.
Thank you to the legislators for those very comprehensive answers, and thank you to Rebecca for that great question that I'm sure is on a lot of parents' minds these days. And this is a reminder to everybody on the call that if you have a question for your state elected officials, please press *3 on your phone, and we'll get you into the question queue as soon as possible. Next, we have a question from Kevin, and he wants to talk a little bit about the inequality in taxes in our state. Kevin, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much. Lori, you just touched on my point, and there was just another article on the Internet or in the paper or something about just how regressive the tax system is in Washington State. And it hasn't been that way for a few years or a few decades. It's been that way historically. And how do voters, Democrat or Republican aside, get our legislature to bring this publicly, advertise this to the voters so that we get a change? Because all we hear are tolls on roads, tolls on bridges, and more costs coming out of people's pockets that are already overpaying their share.
Yeah, so thank you for the question, Kevin. And I think there's a number of things that we need to do. First of all, it's really incumbent on those of us who are working down here in Olympia to be clear with voters what they're buying with their money. And I think it's become pretty clear to folks that our K-12 education system is not doing what it needs to do for our kids, and that we are falling behind also in our higher ed system. And so when our students get out of either high school or higher education, if they do, they're not competitive with the rest of the world because we are not appropriately investing in those things. So I think the first thing we have to do is really tell people and help people learn and discuss and understand what are the services that the state's obligated to provide and what we would do if we had more revenue in the system. Same with our mental health system, which is generally considered to be completely broken. We were ranked 48th in the nation in terms of our services that we provide our mentally ill family members and neighbors and friends. But we do have the opportunity, for example, as I said, by closing tax loopholes, and the governor proposed a number of those to us, to start shifting that regressive tax system. And when I say regressive, I mean that the poorest 20% of people living in Washington State spend 18% of their income on taxation, whereas the wealthiest 5% spend only 2.3% of their income on taxation. That's the definition of regressivity. So closing tax loopholes that benefit the rich and the wealthy but don't help create a good economic system for us in the state of Washington are the things that we need to look at. I think the capital gains tax will do that too, because it's really only going to touch on the top 1% in Washington State. So those are just some ideas.
Thank you for that great answer, Representative Jenkins. And to everyone on the line, we have our telephone town hall going. It's live. And if you have a question for your state legislators, please press *3 on your phone now. And next, we have a question from Catherine. And Catherine wants to know about what we're doing for affordable housing here in our state. Catherine, go ahead with your question, please.
Oh, I'd like to know what we're doing about affordable housing for the state, because my son is not in affordable housing, and we are trying to get him into affordable housing. And he is on Social Security disability. So I was wondering what can be done to assist him.
Thank you for calling, Catherine. This is Jeannie, and over the last few years, we've tried to implement more and more access to affordable housing, and we've changed the way that individuals like you and your son could find out what the available resources are in our community. The easiest way in Pierce County to do that is to call up Associated Ministries, which is the lead agency for linking people to housing in our community. And it could be that your son would qualify for some of those subsidized housing units through the Housing Authority, or he might be able to cue in on one of the other resources that's available in the community. Associated Ministries is located at 383-3056. So you can call that number during the workday and link up with their Housing for Success folks in that office, and they should begin to be able to refer your son to appropriate services.
Thank you, Senator Darnielle. And to everyone on the line, if you have a question for your elected officials, please press *3 on your phone now. And moving us right along, next we have a question from Vol, and he wants to know about what's going on with transportation. Vol, are you on the line?
Yes.
Please go ahead with your question.
I just want to know what they're going to do about Tacoma streets. They are terrible. I live in the south end. In the north end, the streets are not bad. But I live in the south end, and the streets are terrible.
Okay. Well, thanks. This is Representative Fye. Thanks for the question. I had 7 years of experience on the city council trying to deal with issue. And the underlying issue is that cities have a lot of challenges, whether it's fire protection or police protection. And so sometimes roads become a lesser priority in that regard. So I actually have proposed, and working with another legislator from the King County area, some additional sources of revenue for local governments, one of which is to allow city councils to add to the vehicle license charges going from now, which is at $20, taking that to $50. But the problem of local roads, just like with state roads and the need for additional roads like 167, is all about having enough revenue sources. And local governments can't do much about it without new resources, and the state really has the control on granting further authority for us. So it's all about having the revenues that are necessary. I'm sympathetic to your problems. I've seen what conditions the roads are in the south end of Tacoma, so I know you're not making it up, but we'll do our best to provide some more resources for local governments.
I just wanted to add that sometimes it's confusing about which issues are dealt with at the state level, which are dealt with at the federal level, and which are dealt with at the city or county level. And it all rolls together, though, whether we're dealing with the highways and the bridges and the ferries, or the local entities are dealing with roads and potholes. It's a big problem everywhere. And Pierce County is, as you know, right now in the midst of gearing up for a major bridge removal and replacement along the I-5 corridor, the widening of the I-5 corridor, and we're set for about 6 or more years of construction on the freeways that go through the 27th District. And so we expect delays, but progress on any of those kind of entities takes a lot of time and a lot of money. And as Jake said, the city hasn't been able to make that investment yet, but we hope they can.
Thanks, Will, for that great question. Sounds like your state legislators are going to try and work hard to get rid of those potholes that you drive over most days. And this is another reminder to everybody on the line that if you have a question for your elected officials, please press *3 on your phone, and we will get you in the question queue. And next, we have a question from Edward, and it's a very hot topic about what's going on in our state about medical marijuana. Edward, are you on the line and with us?
Yeah, I'm on the line.
Please go ahead with your question.
What I'd like to know is, are you guys going to get rid of the dispensaries for the medical marijuana people and make them go to 502 places to buy their marijuana?
This is Jeannie. I would say that if I were to poll my colleagues in the Senate, I would find out that everybody is on a different point on the map on this topic. But it is definitely under consideration. I think we have 6 or 7 bills that have already been introduced in the Senate on this topic, with the two major negotiators on this topic really a little bit at odds about that particular point. But about my perception of it and what I've been advocating for is that medical marijuana locations should be regulated differently than they currently are, because there's a general community perception, and certainly among some of my colleagues in the Senate, a perception that the wrong people are getting these prescriptions, and they're getting and they're ruining the system for all the people that legitimately have strong medical need for marijuana. So if we can figure out how to regulate that industry in a way that resolves some of those kinds of perceptions and realities, I guess, then I think we can secure the medical marijuana side of this operation. But there are many different processes and ideas on the table right now, and we are struggling to find common ground at this point. But I think we're generally committed to spend the rest of the session and work hard on this issue, because we know a lot of lives depend on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Darnielle, for that great answer. Next, for everyone on the line, if you have a question, please press star 3 on your phone at any time, and we'll get you connected into the question queue. Up next, we have a question about a very local issue. It's about Ruston annexation, and Jim wants to know what's going on with it. Jim, are you on the line with us? Hi there, Jim. Are you with us? Sounds like we may have lost Jim, so let's move on to another question from another caller. This is from Victoria, and Victoria has a question about tax breaks that we may or may not be giving to corporations. Victoria, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead with your question.
Well, this goes back, in a way, to the regressive tax structure. I know that we have historically, and we are continuing to offer really enormous tax breaks to corporations like Boeing, which, you know, they certainly accept these great offers, but they continue to move jobs and business out of Washington State. And it seems unreasonable to be continuing to do this. I think we have to stop thinking of Boeing as a Washington corporation and realize that they've moved on without us. What are we doing about dealing with some of these giveaways?
Well, I don't have a complete answer for your question, but I will say that over 2,000 people in our district work at Boeing, so it's not a giveaway to some corporation in another place. It's supporting job development, and we have to look at the sort of the balance here of what kind of tax breaks are given and what kind of benefit is had. So when I think about 2,000 people just in our little district, you know, in our district, who you know, take those dollars that they make in their salary and they support a local dry cleaner, or they go to a local grocery store, or their kid goes to our schools, you know, it's really not a small issue when you recognize the economic impact, even as far away from where the plants are as our district is. So. No simple answers here, I'm afraid. We try to balance those kind of tax breaks with the reality of whether or not they accomplish their goals. And job creation is really foremost, I think, in our minds about those tax breaks. On another kind of angle on tax breaks, I should say that just because we know that they work or they don't work, there's always going to be an industry that wants to have another tax break. And I think if I look at the bills that have been introduced this year so far, I'm shocked, quite frankly, knowing the financial condition we are and how hard it's going to be to balance a budget, how many of my fellow members are coming forward with ideas for new tax breaks. So I'm opposed to those unless they show a real economic impact, and I think Boeing's actually does show that economic impact more than many, many others.
Victoria, this is Lori, and I was just going to add in a little bit that I've actually never met with anyone from Boeing, and it just happened this week that for the first time ever, Boeing came to my office and I met with them, and it was interesting to learn, and I haven't had a chance to look really thoroughly at the data they left me, but they indicated that actually the percentage of Boeing that is in Washington State has grown over the last 8 years, not shrunk. So actually they've hired more workers. So the story that I was telling myself about them moving out of state, they have moved jobs, but they've moved many more jobs into the state of Washington. So it's something that I'm going to look more at the kind of data that they provided, because it's not at all what I thought. The other thing I just wanted to comment on is I do really agree with, I think, the suggestion you're making that one of the things we should really be doing is making sure that we're very clear as legislators. When we look at a tax break that's being proposed, we look to see, is that more beneficial to us and to the people of the state of Washington than funding our kids' K-12 education? We should ask ourselves that stark question. And there are times when we're going to say, yes, because of job creation or because of something else that may be brought into the economy that may actually generate more revenue than we would actually be giving up. But there are quite a few examples, some big and some small, where that trade-off just isn't cutting it.
Thank you very much for those comprehensive answers about tax subsidies, which is something that I think a lot of us are thinking about these days as we pay our taxes too. And this is a reminder for everybody on the line that if you have a question for your elected officials, please press star 3 and we will get you in the question queue. Next, we are going to try again with another caller. This one is Bradley, and he has some concerns about the Ruston annexation and would like to ask a question about that. Bradley, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Good.
My question has to do with the proposed bill regarding the annexation of a part of the city of Ruston by the city of Tacoma for the benefit of one developer, especially in light of the fact that the developer has actually been running afoul of not only the codes of building codes of the city of Ruston, but also the EPA and the Utilities Commission, which have grave concerns about the way that the site has been remediated and about things that are being done down there without any inspection.
So, Bradley, this is Representative Fye, and I'll take a first toss at this question. So, first of all, the developer is, as I understand, using what is the current legal authority for that development to do, which is to first petition the city of Tacoma, and if the city of Tacoma agrees with the petition to change cities, so to speak, then that goes to the Ruston Town Council. So let me just drop back and say, I think we would all say here that we're concerned about the project moving forward. It has a great potential economic impact for both jobs and for our tax base, and we do need more tax base in Tacoma in particular. And in addition to that, if the project should somehow stall, the city of Tacoma is required to pay $3 million a year if there is no property owner actively developing the site, $3 million for all the infrastructure that's already been put in. So this has the whole issue has a lot of consequences, and a couple of us have had conversations recently with both the town of Ruston and with the city of Tacoma in terms of hoping that we can move the project forward, not get bogged down into side issues, but really have a conclusion that allows the project to go forward, but also to make sure that the laws of the Ruston and the requirements of the EPA and other state agencies are met.
Thank you very much, Representative Fye, for addressing that tough issue. Next on the line, we have a question from Lois, and she wants to know what's going on with mental health in our state, especially putting people in jail and what's going on in schools. Lois, are you here with us on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
All right. I want to know what's been done in the last year, 2 years, to help our mentally ill people instead of them sleeping under the bridges, in the alleys, in people's porches. And it's not that they got up one morning and said, well, I'm just going to be mentally ill today and maybe the rest of my life. It just seems like nothing is being done for these people. And it's sad. And there's one thing that I think should be done, and I think it's very important, and I have done it for someone who they just told me they didn't have a place to live. They were getting released from Western State Hospital, and I said, did you sign up? Did your worker sign you up for housing when you got, you know, so that you would go straight into housing or you would be on a waiting list? No. I said, well, my daughter and I will do that for you. So we did, and he did get a place to live. But that should be mandatory when they are released from the hospital and they're able to take care of theirself enough to buy a gallon of milk and a jar of peanut butter to have them a place to go and lay down and sleep. What have we done in the last 5 years for a mentally ill people?
I think probably, Lois, thank you so much for that question. It's at the core of the work that I'm doing in the Senate this year. But I think one of the really positive things that we've done in Tacoma in the last year is open up the Robert Townsend House apartments. It's 35 units of apartments where there are wraparound services for chronically homeless, mentally ill people from our community, mostly men, half of whom are veterans who are homeless, and it's located in Tacoma, and it's got a 24-hour-a-day concierge is what they call it, but it's really a mental health counselor that is at the main desk and is available to respond to people's needs 24/7 that live there. So, you know, it's very hard for people who've been out on the street also to be successful when they come inside. And this new apartment plan is demonstrating an evidence-based practice of really responding immediately to what people's needs are and supporting them as they move inside into apartments. So that's a very successful new program that's just gotten up and running in Tacoma. And it's funded in part by state dollars to help with the renovation of the building. But then the city has come forward with part of their 0.1% sales tax bump money, which is helping the mentally ill and chemically dependent people in our community. But there are several other examples. And this session, we're again attacking mental health issues with gusto, but we are going to be adding space out at Western State so people are not released quickly, where they're going to be able to get both their evaluation and their treatment services as they're in the forensic system at least. And we're going to be adding quite a bit more money in supportive services in the community, both in inpatient and possibly outpatient care. So much is coming ahead, but we have two lawsuits dealing with mental health issues that we have lost as a state. So we are now bound by the court to improve those systems, and we're in the process right now of working out how it's all going to be implemented. But I agree with you wholeheartedly that people should not be leaving Western State without a discharge plan, and I will certainly follow up and make sure that I talk with them about that issue. Thank you so much for raising it.
Thank you, Senator Darnielle, for that great answer. And this is to everyone on the line. If you have a question for Senator Darnielle or Representative Jenkins or Representative Fye, please press *3 on your phone right now, and we'll get you into the question queue as soon as possible. Next, we have a question from Leslie Rose, and Leslie wants to know about what's going on with oil transportation, something we've all been hearing a lot about these days with oil trains. Leslie, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I was wondering where the state is wanting or thinking about moving in terms of oil trains. Senator Darnielle, you know, we do have several of these that move through Tacoma on a regular basis, including at least one a week that then continues from the downtown corridor along Ruston Way, underneath the bridge, and out into the Narrows. And they are a disaster awaiting to happen. Everything that I worked with and know and have researched about these, it's a disaster waiting to happen. Recently, in the last few weeks, industry's been pushing back with its own campaign, sort of soft-selling the whole issue and the whole problem and characterizing it, you know, as reactionary and, you know, really there's no problem and we're all being really good people. So I'm wondering where the state is kind of heading on this.
So, Leslie, if you don't mind, I'm going to take that question as Representative Fye, because I'm on the Environment Committee and we had a hearing this week on a bill that's been proposed. It's a comprehensive bill. It's a result of a study that the legislature funded last year during our last session. And basically, the issue, it's a broader issue because people are also concerned about coal trains as well. But let's talk a little bit about what the situation is. We've got, the past has been that oil came through Puget Sound primarily to the refineries by water. And now what's happening in U.S. Oil, which is located in Tacoma, is a prime example. They are getting their oil now, and it's a more dangerous oil, from North Dakota. And so those trains come through and supply the refinery where they make products. So one of the things that sort of struck me is obviously the construction and the quality of the tankers is very important, but also the making sure that we have the kind of emergency support that is necessary to respond. The way things are right now, if you bring oil by water, it's taxed. If it's brought in by rail, it is not taxed. So that is an element to provide the resources, the financial resources to deal with this. And, you know, to wrap this up and not carry on, be happy to talk with you offline, but we are actively working on a bill that's going to hopefully start addressing the whole issue of oil transportation by rail.
Thank you, Representative Fye, for that very up-to-date answer about what's going on with oil transportation. And for everyone else on the line who's concerned about oil transportation or any other issue, if you have a question, please press *3 on your phone, and we'll get you into the question queue as soon as possible. Next, we have a question from Lynn. And Lynn wants to know about incorporating student testing in teacher evaluations. Lynn, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Well, you already said it just exactly as I would. How do you feel about incorporating student test scores into teacher evaluations?
This is Lori. I think I don't serve on the education committee, so I may be the least good person to answer this, but I'll try and just be direct about it. I don't think that test scores should be the sole issue included in an evaluation at all. I think it's okay to include them as one of the elements in a teacher evaluation, but we know that there's a lot of things beyond test scores that illustrate both a student's learning and a teacher's success in teaching. So they absolutely shouldn't be the only thing, but I'm not particularly bothered if they were a small percentage or some part of a teacher evaluation. So
I'd like to say that this Jeannie, that I'm opposed to that tie, and I've long spoken against it. I went to 15 schools in 12 years in my own upbringing, four high schools in 4 years in three countries, thanks to traveling with my dad, who was an Air Force Chief Master Sergeant that got stations hither and yon, but I will say that no one teacher that I had who had me for a year should be evaluated on my performance in their classroom, having not had the benefit of having taught me the year before or even the month before, depending on what part of the year we moved. So Pierce County has an awful lot of Department of Defense dependents. There are over 55,000 kids of school age that are linked to the military in our county, and those kids deserve a chance to get the best education they can, but their teachers should not be evaluated based on their performance because it could have been really bad wherever they came from.
Thank you very much. We're going to move right along quickly here because we don't have a lot of time left and we want to get to as many people as possible. So next we have a question from Ramona, and Ramona wants to know about what we're doing to reform our criminal justice system. What's going on in there? Ramona, are you on the line with us?
I am.
Please go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good afternoon. My name is Ramona Womack, and I'm calling about questions about, does the Constitution apply to African-American men in Washington State? The reason I'm asking is because my son is in prison. He was sent to prison to Sheridan Camp, and the prosecutors and the judge, the judicial and the prosecutorial misconduct he had to go through was egregious. And so what I'd like to know is, what are the legislators doing about reforming our criminal justice system, where the government will lead morally and ethically again, like they used to? My son did not plea bargain. He went to court. He went through all of his judicial steps that he had to take for his constitution, and it was a travesty. It was horrible. And now he's serving in Texas. The prosecutors get to send him wherever they want to send him. You know, he was supposed to be in Sheridan at a camp, never been in prison before. It was not gun-related. But the prosecutor just used all of her powers to say he was John Gotti. And we are now in the appeals court right now, and the prosecutor is still attacking our son. He has served 5 years. She moved him to Texas, where he hasn't gotten medication for one solid year. So what my husband and I want to know is, what can we do about our legislators to get them to change the criminal justice reform to...
Okay, this is Jeannie. Sorry to cut you off there, getting more than one question, but let me just say I was a little confused about why your son would be in Texas if he was charged here in Washington State, because we don't have any out-of-state, we don't have any folks in out-of-state prisons right now. So, but that aside, I would like to address two of the issues you raised, which sounded like a racial disproportionality in our criminal justice system. That sounded like one of the issues you wanted to talk about, and you wanted to know what we're doing now. And I agree wholeheartedly. We, of course, have lots of documentation and data about the makeup of the folks that are living in our prisons right now, not only in Washington, but across the country, and we have severe racial disproportionality, meaning, in a short phrase, that we have more people of color who are serving sentences for longer periods of time than their counterparts in the Caucasian population. So what that points to is whether or not there was adequate representation. In this case, you had a prosecutor that was very aggressive, and you may not have had good defense bar. So we work a lot in this state to maintain access to good representation for the poor, so that they can come up and be prepared and be treated appropriately in our criminal justice courts. But we have to look further back than the adults that are in our system. And I have thrown myself into working on juvenile justice issues, because when I came in the legislature, 77% of the people in our adult system had also been in our juvenile system. And we're doing a lot now to divert kids away from the deep end of the pool into incarceration, so that they don't end up going back out in the community and recidivating. And the way we do that is through supportive services and a real attention to the fact that we need to change and reform our system to better serve kids with the services they need, the mental health services and the chemical dependency services and the family reunification services that need to happen, so they don't go into the adult system or don't commit more crimes as an adult. So, big issue. Sorry I've taken up so much time, but I could talk for hours about the criminal justice system, and would be happy to meet with folks on that issue.
One small thing about this, this is Lori, that I'd like to make people aware of. I agree with everything that Jeannie said, in addition, our Supreme Court has pretty much said that at the local level, people who can't afford to pay for an attorney in a criminal proceeding, that those attorneys are overburdened, and that we are not funding our indigent defense system adequately. And you know that, I mean, everybody on the phone call knows that if you have too many things to do at your job, then you start failing at some of those things. And what's happening is that means that our attorneys are failing in their defense of folks who may very well be innocent and deserve an appropriate defense. So figuring out how to better fund indigent defense at the local level is something that we've been working on in the Judiciary Committee, and hoping while working with the courts this year that we might find some solutions to that too.
Thank you, Representative Jenkins and Senator Darnielle, for those answers. Next, moving right along, we have a question from Virgil in Tacoma, and he wants to know about what's going on with landlord-tenant issues. Virgil, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead.
Okay, I am a mold tester and inspector. I do environmental testing and investigation. I have found in numerous cases where the landlords, basically, when I come in, I discover the mold, I give them the causes, and they'll come in with Band-Aids, or they'll move the tenants out. Where do I tell these tenants? I mean, legally, where can they go? Is there legislation to protect them? What do I do?
Well, we actually just had a day, a full day's worth, well, for us it's 2 hours, but 2 hours worth of hearings in the Judiciary Committee on landlord-tenant issues this week. We haven't been focused on so much on that, on folks being evicted because they're, it sounds like you're saying that they may be being evicted because they're complaining that their apartment isn't up to code. Although I would say I think recent Supreme Court cases actually would say that the tenant can move out and has been constructively evicted if they have an apartment that has mold in it and things like that that aren't doesn't allow them to live there. Some of the bills, though, that we heard about had to do actually with evictions, and when a landlord starts an eviction and under some circumstance and then decides not to go through with it, that ends up on a person's record, even though the eviction was never in a court fully litigated, and then a person ends up not being able to rent at all. And so we had a bill to say, hey, if the eviction didn't go through the court system, you can't use an eviction to deny people the right to rent. And so we've had a number of other landlord-tenant bills. I'd be happy to talk with you. It'd be great to maybe get a call offline and for us to talk a little bit about whether or not there might be some legislation needed on the issues you're talking about.
I'll just add that I sit on the Financial Institutions and Insurance Committee, but for some reason it gets a lot of the housing bills, and then I also get housing bills in the Human Services Committee. But I have seen a real divide between the parties here on how to approach issues relating to landlord-tenant law. We have a proposal, for instance, from the advocate community who are working with people who want to have an ability to, when they get their credit check, when they're applying to get into an apartment unit, that $45 that they spend on that credit check doesn't end up, they don't end up getting denied by that apartment, and then they have to go to another apartment and pay another $45 for that credit check. So we're working on making that credit check portable for 30 days so people that are really actively looking for an apartment could actually find one without having to pay 8 or 9 times for that credit check.
And spend their first month's rent.
Exactly.
Paying for credit checks.
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
So that's one of the things on that side. But on the other side, there are bills that reduce the amount of time that landlords have to spend before they can evict somebody. So there are both ends of this spectrum on landlord-tenant issues, and I'm working on those and would be willing to talk with folks as well offline.
Thank you, Representative Jenkins and Senator Darnielle, something that all renters are concerned about these days. So next on the line, we've got a question from Russ, and he wants to know about transportation funding. What's going on? How are we gonna get things moving again? Russ, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Please go ahead with your question.
I'm concerned about city potholes, but that's under the city government, mostly in the city council. And this is state roads and interstates. The interstates are I've already discussed this with Senator Darnell, but Representative Fye and Representative Jenkins, I'd like to know your feelings on how to fund these items. You've talked about $25 license plates. Well, I'm sure most of ours are a lot more than that when it comes down to purchasing them every year. Maybe something other than an increase for license plates. But these roads are in terrible shape. They could damage cars, maybe cost lives, especially people on motorcycles. And I'd like to know, is the funding going to be available to remedy these situations on our high-speed state and interstate highways?
Well, thank you very much for the question. I do serve as vice chair of the Transportation Committee. I think there may be some hope out there. A couple years ago, the House passed a transportation package that would have raised the gas tax and would have provided some great projects along I-5 and Highway 167. It also would have addressed what is a big problem, as you suggest, is the preservation of existing roadways. And quite frankly, previous measures that raise taxes focus much more on new projects rather than maintaining what we have. And so we are in a hole in that respect. But the proposals that have been talked about in the Senate now and the proposal that we passed 2 years ago in the House would focus more on transportation and making sure that we have preservation funds to be able to keep roads in a good condition, not only roads but bridges as well. But maybe Senator Darnielle wants to comment about what's going on in the Senate in that respect.
Well, the Senate was the block for our being able to pass this proposal 2 years ago. I will say that our Pierce County delegation, and that's both Republicans and Democrats, have pretty much locked arms about this issue, and we're committed to the projects that are slated or are being discussed for Pierce County, including not only road improvements, but the finishing of 167, so that links up with both I-5 and the Port of Tacoma, and that will keep a lot of our trucks moving 24/7 in and through the county, and that's great for commerce and jobs. The other big project in our county is going to be down at the Joint Base Lewis-McChord, where a lot of folks you'll see just stacked up waiting for an hour to get through those kind of gridlock situations. We think we're going to get there this year. We were very hopeful last year that we would break the logjam in the Senate, and I think now that both parties know that going home without a transportation package this year is just not an option. We are going to work hard to finish that off.
Thank you, Senator Neal and Representative Fye, for those great answers about something we're all thinking about when we're sitting on I-5 in that same traffic. So it looks like, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for questions for this evening. But if you are on the line, please don't hang up, because when the call ends in just a few moments, you'll have a chance to leave a message with your legislators. And if you leave your phone number and your email in that message, they or their legislative assistants will get back to you and address your concerns as soon as possible. So thank you to everyone who's been on the call this evening. We've had a lot of wonderful questions, and I'll turn it over to the legislators now for some brief closing remarks.
Well, maybe we'll go in reverse order here. This is Lori. Thanks for those of you who hung in through the whole call, and we'd be also interested to hear if you think this is useful. I did see a Facebook post already thanking us for doing this and saying this was much more convenient. But I mostly just wanted to thank you for sending me down here and telling you you've sent me to the hardest, best job I've ever had in my life. And one of the things that makes it great is being able to talk to constituents. So I really want to encourage you to call probably all of our offices or any of us at any time. We're spending most of our days and nights down here in Olympia right now, so it's hard to find us back in community. But if you send us an email
or give us a call. You'll definitely be able to be in touch with one of us or our legislative assistants, and really encourage you to call and stay in touch with us on issues that are important to you.
This is Representative Fai, and, you know, Jeannie, both Lori and Jeannie are great representatives to work with. We work here as a team, and so we communicate very well together about what we're hearing from our constituents. So please keep in contact with us. Things change over time, and we're always glad to hear from constituents. I make sure that my legislative assistant knows that my time priority is responding to questions and dealing with issues that are important to people in the 27th District. So thank you very much for the opportunity to serve you down Olympia.
Well, I, for one, can't believe that time passed so quickly. Well, we had a lot of great topics that we touched on. Every single one of them has a deeper story and more questions to ask and more answers to be found. But I really appreciated all of your participation. I had hoped we'd hear something about the Affordable Care Act so we could push making sure everybody signed up for health insurance. And I thought we might hear something about charter schools because we've got three of them coming online in Tacoma Public, in our Tacoma area in the coming year. But we're always available to talk with you either about issues like that, or if you've got a problem, you or a family member have a problem with a state agency, we always want to offer our assistance in being able to get through to the right people and get the right answers for you. So I love doing these kind of teletown halls. We will have an in-person town hall probably in March.
I think they're scheduled for March 13th.
March 13th we'll have one, probably in the morning, but you'll get a notice about that. And I hope to see, we hope to see many of you at that town hall in Tacoma. And until then, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Take care.